in perhaps, you know, the world's greatest sporting precinct, right in the shadows of one of the world's greatest cities.
I used to love the roar of the crowd.
Magnificent mark taken by Royal Park.
A Viking is born at a time.
He gets inside, well inside.
In any weather you can see a sweeping wind. Listening to the skin, you know, we're behind the chair.
Oh, Cochin, just a little bit of genius.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
How are you feeling about things?
No worse than I was 2 weeks ago. Actually, probably no worse than I was 4 weeks ago, for what that's worth.
I actually had a great moment of sort of, I don't know if it was just a humane feeling, like just a sense of sort of the game beyond the game, if that makes any sense, during Friday night's effort that actually struck me after a Richmond goal and the cheer squad went up. And I saw that someone in the cheer squad still had a Steve Morris banner. And I thought, oh, you know, objectively speaking, it's been at least 3 years since Steve Morris was even an average outfield player, but somebody still loves him enough to bring a banner to the game, and I felt a great outpouring of affection for Richmond supporters at sort of their ability to, you know, despite the profound and recurring disappointment that their football club subjects them to, that, you know, the supporters' resilience and humanity was actually, I found it quite touching.
Mm. Well, I mean, Steve Morris is still on the contract next year, so that banner will have some longevity. I think the Steve Morris comments are flogged to death, but Lord knows I did last year. But I actually don't like criticising him on Twitter, because I notice it upsets a few people who are big fans of him anymore. So I've sort of backed off him a bit on Twitter. Because
I know it goes to show just the sheer range of opinions out there on you know, that you think you've got a, you know, that everyone's thinking the same way, and then it turns out that other people just coming at it from a completely different perspective.
So, sort of related, and I think this is just observation bias rather than actuality, but like sort of on a similar line, I noticed, I heard the cheer squad making a chant, who are we, we're the boys from the MCG. It was one of those old school chants that you used to hear in the cheer squad in the 80s, and I know they've never stopped doing it. But you normally don't hear it on the TV broadcast because the Richmond crowd, especially home crowds, are loud enough that you don't hear it. And I noticed that you heard it on the broadcast. That might have just been a coincidence, but I also sort of wondered whether that had partly due to the understandable. I mean, it was the smallest Hawthorn Richmond crowd since 2012, so it wasn't a catastrophic drop off, but also maybe a drop off in the average noise that the average fan is making as well.
I know. I did actually. I've been thinking a bit about this in terms of trying to get some historical context to yet another wave of disappointment that the Richmond Football Club is putting us through. And I did think about. I came back to a game that we went to in the end of the 1980s, Richmond versus Brisbane on a cold, wet day, and I checked, and the crowd was just under 9,000 people at the MCG, and on the replay, you could literally see our umbrella bobbing up and down when Richmond kicked a goal. And it was of some very small consolation that, regardless of sort of how bad the current situation gets, that a sort of some of the trauma that was possible in the late 1980s of the club either relocating interstate or, you know, seemingly folding it all together, at least we don't have to go through that. And why that came to mind was looking at North Melbourne this year, that where, you know, everything's gone right, you know, they've got an ageing list, having one last crack at a premiership, and they still can't even average 25,000 people a game. Like their margin for error as a football club of is minimal now, which is not to say that Richmond should be complacent about the fact that the whole purpose of football clubs is to win premierships and play meaningful finals, but at least we don't have that sort of extra level of existential angst that we had to deal with then, and other clubs still have to deal with now.
Yeah, and I mean, you're completely right. It is sort of pushing one of my sort of current resentment towards the club is the huge inequity in what the supporters have given to the club versus what the club has given in on-field performance. So that I am actually sort of quite resentful of that at the moment, but I do take your point. There was one stat, and now it won't stay like this because we've got two Essendon games coming up, and recover some way to get closer to mediocre rather than sort of bottom four that we are at right now in the AFL. But right now, we are almost 50 percentage points below what we were last year, which is an amazing fall. As I said, I don't think it'll be the case at the end of the year, but I suspect if it was the case at the end of the year, that would be close to an all-time record. I'd love Champion Data to look into that, actually. That's an optimistic point. Let's talk about the game.
Look, I do expect a little bit of a reversion to the
mean. We do have two Essendon games, so we haven't played St Kilda yet or Brisbane. So there's plenty. And
there's mediocre teams, and as bad as our percentage is, I think it's still only the fifth worst percentage. So there's some other teams having some very profoundly bad seasons. Actually, another thought I had during the day, the game was actually a sense of having done this before, like that at least having so many young players, I actually enjoyed thinking about, the prior development process and what it is that you can tell about young players and sort of reflecting on that Carlton's had a surprisingly good season, but then I checked and Carlton's one of the six oldest teams in the competition, so sort of what the takeaway from that from their future prospects is almost zero, whereas at least
I'm sort of beyond the point where favourable comparisons to Carlton make me feel better anymore. I appreciate it. If I in regard for them as a football team, I would start to hate them more again. But yeah, I do take your point.
I do think they are seriously having a Terry Wallace era dead cat bounce, which does make me feel very slightly better.
We're better than one club out of 18. Sorry, go.
I know it is a bit of a competition at work actually at the moment with the guy who's got the office next door to mine is a Fremantle supporter, and it's pretty dark times for Fremantle supporters.
They played a grand final. Anyway, you can. It is dark times for Fremantle supporters. It's dark time for Collingwood supporters. It's dark time for Carlton supporters.
Every bad club is like a dysfunctional family. They are dysfunctional and unhappy in their own unique way.
There are also a lot of popular clubs are bad at the moment.
It can't be good for the AFL. You will be pleased to hear that with random dude with office next to mine, I've already organised trading the third pick in the draft for Alex Rance at the end of the year, so we can just lock that one in.
It's controversial. Perhaps we could debate that more. I mean, I want to get more. You were talking about the watching the young players on the game. What stood out to you from those young players in the game?
Well, in terms of the process of watching young players, it's that the whole, because young players make mistakes. We all know that. It's the question about are these young, and the fact that most players fail, that the average AFL career is 3.5 years long. You know, the ones that go on to be a success and have a 10-year career are actually the exception. So you're sort of, you know, thinking about, well, they've got a chance, but the odds are against them. So which of these young players, there's five in that sort of 18 to 20 bracket in the team on the weekend, like which of these guys are a genuine building blocks for the future? And, you know, it's no surprise, Corey Ellis for me is probably the one that I'm least worried about. I thought this game, we've talked before about, you know, he hasn't been winning a ton of inside ball, but and he's manning up against opponents. It still clearly needs a lot of work, but his ability to think his way through traffic was actually something I really enjoyed this week.
Yeah, okay. I'm just actually, while you're talking, I was just looking up his contested ball work because I didn't remember it off the top of my head. But yeah, I mean, he's looking all right. I agree, he's looking the best of a lot. He's not looking like a future ball Australian. Which doesn't mean he won't be one.
No. He's not looking like a future star. He led the team in rebound 50s, which was,
you know, a decent disposal effectiveness. Something, but... he's mainly outside. I still don't see what Francis was saying. I checked his junior stats. He wasn't a big contested ball winner. He did lead his VF, TSC Cup team for clearances, but that clearance is a bit different to contested ball. He's looking decent, and you know what? Like, we talked offline about when I'm annoyed about Dimmer. One of the points you're defending him, you like the fact that he's playing Corey Ellis this year. I'm actually convinced Corey Ellis is the best 22 player. Like, particularly when you look at what our VFL's team doing. Like, I don't actually like.
I agree. He is now. He had a shocker of a game, I think, in round two, but they persevered.
You persevered. Plenty of people that are also getting games who are much older than him have had horrendous, should never play again games and still get played. So, all I'm saying is I think Corey Ellis is being good. Anyway, I think Menadue was solid, but had another sort of worryingly low possession game, which doesn't mean he's not. He's just not. What's going to make Richmond watchable for me at the end of the year is one of these guys emerging a bit more, kicking the next level. And for me, that's Connor Menadue, high teens, low 20s in his possession count. I mean, we've talked before. I like it.
I think consistency is going to be. You're just not getting consistency from these guys. Like, Daniel Rioli is sort of the extreme example. Like, he's, you know, he had really good first quarter on the weekend. I actually think his defensive effort, he's pretty solid right throughout the game. But, yeah, as was the case with his junior career, he can go hold quarters without touching the ball.
Daniel Rioli's playing... Like, he's a rich man's Steve Morris as a forward pocket. He's playing Steve Morris's role, but with much greater athleticism. And as you pointed out, he's a natural tackler. But it's not that... obviously it's not that much harder to be better than Steve Morris in it, which it clearly is. The hard thing to add an attacking... Like, I think his defensive pressure is actually pretty good already. It's good enough.
I think his defensive pressure is already up to standard, which is incredible for someone as skinny as he is, but he's still, I think both him and Castagna, the shock of, for both those guys, where they've come in and they're both genuinely quick by any measure, but, you know, there's guys on the other team who are really genuinely quick too and adjusting. I think that's the biggest shock in moving up to the AFL is that pace of play and learning when you can put on the jets and run away from guys and when, you know, you've got to get rid of the ball quickly, and they're both clearly learning that at the moment.
Okay, so in comparison with his cousin, this is Rioli, and obviously his cousin's a multiple Australian, so it's a high bar, but, you know, Lord knows comparison's been made by plenty of other people than us. In his first year, his cousin, some of the numbers are similar. Cousin kicked a bit more goals, but still early. It's a low sample size. But his cousin did have a bit more than four more disposals a game. So that's what Brioli's got to get better at the second half of the year, get his average. But at the moment, he's at 9 disposals a game. He just needs to get it a bit. By the way, which is, I think, still more than Steve Morris averaged as a... Sorry to keep kicking him in when he's down. Needs to get that up. Needs to get the possession count. Needs to have a couple of 15-touch games, you know.
Like that first quarter he had when he was just really involved in the play, both.
And he got the ball more than his possession count because he got caught a few times and didn't get rid of it, but at least he was in the play. Yeah. He was central to the flow.
Yeah, and it's learning how to... Maybe it's learning how to concentrate and... Just impose yourself on the game more. What do you think about Jason Castagna's first two games of senior football?
Okay, first game, so low expectations. Didn't like he was very one-sided in one hand pass he did. He used, do you know what I mean? Like he used the wrong, he used his dominant side when he should have used his non.
Like many genuinely quick guys, horribly one-sided.
Yeah, so... Yeah, he butchered it a bit. As you said, he's quick. I don't know. He did nothing that particularly excited me, but, you know, I'm not going to make a downside judgment on a first gamer.
No. Look, I was impressed that he stuck with it because he did have a few clangers and, you know, he let guys run free, but I had a feeling that he kept trying hard all game, which... I liked. He definitely needs to tidy up the disposal. But, you know, physically he's up to the level. It's the skills and the footy nous aspect of the game that he's gotta work out. So look, I'm glad we've got him. I'm certainly not prepared to rule him out, but yeah, he certainly needs to work with it.
I heard a little bit of gossip about Jaden Short. Aside from the fact he kicked two goals, nice shot at goal he is too. I think it's fair to say
nice snap at goal as well. That was impressive.
Yeah, it looks like we're getting a bit of a sample size. It's not luck. He does seem like a genuine good shot at goal. Apparently, it was no coincidence he played in round one that he was he won the award for sort of best trainer in the off season. It's something that's not announced. It's just one of those little coaches' awards. So, he's a funny old player. If you were to say over under, like what is his chances of making it to 50 games, I'd still probably say 50-50. But there's something there, definitely.
There is something there. He's a very good shot for goal, which
helps.
He ran one of the better beep tests on the team as a junior, and I think that's because he's clearly small. That's what he has to lean on if he's going to be effective as a AFL player. He's got to work really hard, get up the ground, and get back again into positions that are dangerous. So yeah, I probably like Castagna more almost.
Really?
Maybe I'm overrating physical tools because I do like the way that Castagna attacks the contest. But yeah, I can go either way on Short. And I'm happy to watch him as well
because I can see him play a position. Like I can see I can picture his role. As yeah, the
he's he's clearly got a position,
which is sort of my problem with. Can say, and that's the nice thing about Rioli too. At least you can, like he's already playing the role. Yeah. He could potentially be an All Australian. That's it.
Well, speaking of roles,
please.
Well, speaking of roles, we had two guys in newish.
Yeah, so I was going to raise Vossi next. So, yeah.
Well, I was going to raise McIntosh then. Vlossy. So I thought that McIntosh, he had a couple of errors and he got outmarked by Gunston at one stage, which sort of no shame in that. But Another time he spoiled towards goal rather than away from goal, which is a cardinal sin for a defender, but otherwise I thought he had a pretty solid game.
Mm. We've definitely... I don't particularly like it. I like him as a running player. But we've got an issue here now, because Chappie's obviously... And, you know, we were talking with some Richmond friends offline on a Twitter conversation, and, we'll do the valedictory thing for Chappie later, but, you know, he has been a brave servant of the club, really deserved the 4-year contract, but the end's coming.
Absolutely.
Asprey, at the moment, doesn't look like the answer, so clearly we need other options at the key back, and we appear to have kept Todd Elton on the list because... He's got a parking car at training. Yeah. I could see why they did it. But I've said many times in the show, I like McIntosh and outside runner. But we'll see how it goes. Now,
I'm looking forward to seeing him and Grimes and Rance and another key defender where you sort of Rance and the other tall, whoever it is, ideally Asprey, but, you know, whoever it is, and Rance and McIntosh sort of are fairly interchangeable playing on both taller and shorter guys. Like, having that versatility in defence I'd really like, and so, you know, you've got the option of playing McIntosh a bit further up the ground. Blossie, you mentioned him, and clearly not quite, you know, he was first week back from an injury, and, fair to say he faded.
Yeah, maybe he didn't. Maybe he's still working his way back. It was a lower leg injury, which I think is, you know, I mean, it was obviously impeding him before he went out. I was amused that the club website, God, it must be hard writing puff pieces all the time when their team's lost so many games in a row. You know, as we said, pointed out, 73%. Presumably that they have a club with the other clubs that they have support groups with PR people from the other clubs and aren't doing so well. They declared victory on the Vossi experiment. I don't think it was a victory. 16 possessions is too low, because the question is always going to be with Vossi. We know Vossi's classy. The question is he going to be classy enough, consistently enough, to be a midfielder? Having said that, I want them to continue with the experiment because I think it's an interesting one.
Well, that was exactly what I was going to say, that, you know, in terms of things that I want to watch over the course of this season, you know, there's very little. There's nothing about Taylor Hunt. God bless his soul, but I find life-affirming. Like, whereas Vossi in midfield, there's clearly something there, and I'm happy to keep working with that.
Okay, now, I don't want to talk too much about the game, but I do want to...
Well, I did want to talk about, you know, Tiger Vickery. They talked a lot on the commentary about the time he had off in the second quarter, you know, blah, blah, blah. It was such a Ty Vickery game for me. The high quality finishing, managed to hit the post, which is seemingly something he's doing a lot of at the moment. But just I reckon he had about 5 or 6 marks where he threw himself at the ball, got in position, and clanked off his hands. Like, you know, it did make me wonder if, because, frankly, Hawthorn are one of the teams when I try and think about, well, Ty Vickery is going to be a free agent. He's likely going to be one of the best free agents. I would prefer to keep Ty Vickery at Richmond, but if another club offers him a stupid amount of money and we get a top 10 draft pick as compensation, I'd be happy to shake Ty's hand and wish him well wherever he goes. And wherever he goes, potentially Hawthorn being one of those clubs. So, you know, these are the strange and conflicted thoughts that I'm having while watching games right now.
No one really cares about my Hawthorn analysis, but just watching that game and, like, knowing that they're getting done in the contested mark, contested possession stats every week, but finding a way to win. I think they've been brilliantly coached, but they need they're running on fumes, yeah, they need a proper midfield, because you can't, like, it's great that they're winning by being top level with ball use, but it's just not sustainable because they're losing the contested ball every week. But this is not the Hawthorn Tiger talk. This is
very brief crush for me of Jonathan O'Rourke is looking like one of the very few bad Hawthorn trades of recent years.
Yeah, but he was injured. But yeah, he wasn't kicking goals last year. So he wasn't looking good last year. So just something on the game. I did want to ask you what you thought of Hammer, because it's looking increasingly like he's a free agent, but he's looking like Hammer's going to be our starting ruck next year. Had quite a good game by Hammer standard.
Well, let's get on to the starting ruck comment. His first quarter was as good a ruckman as I can remember from a Richmond ruckman for a very long time. I thought he was feeding our midfielders. I did also think that he faded pretty badly and was part of the problem in the last quarter as things went to hell, that he was part of the problem, not the solution. But it was an impressive first quarter.
So just something, we had the bottom seven possession getters on the game. And only one of those guys had played less than 50 games. And that was it was Jaden Short, who kicked some goals, so it was forgivable.
Forgive him.
And so numerous, and most of those guys are serial offenders in the low possession game. And Sean Hampson. I didn't want to pick on Hammer individually, because at least he's a ruckman. But, you know, six possessions, that's not getting those
right. Well, look,
maybe
let's get back to ruckman when we finish the game. But my note on Ben Griffiths was just good enough to get you beaten.
Yeah, which is... Steve Morris needs to improve considerably to get to that level. And I think Jade Batchelor is somewhere between Ben Griffiths and Steve Morris on that scale. Taron Vickery, already discussed. Sean Hampson, already discussed. Camden McIntosh, I don't know, maybe gets a pass because he's one of the few that actually normally gets more than that. Difficult times at Tiger Lines.
I thought McIntosh's defensive work was better than we've seen from him. That was all I had from the game. Was there anything else for you?
I could analyze. I broke down. The first quarter was frustrating the first quarter was a symbolic of the whole game in that we worked much harder for our goals than they did. But I don't think I think that that's pretty obvious to anyone who watched the game. So I don't think there's any need to dwell on it.
I was encouraged that we finally got to see both Dusty and Miles back at normal form for both of them.
Point to mention that Dusty had 15 contested possessions, which is quite a lot for Dusty. It's nice to see him make a return.
Miles looked a fair bit better than he has in previous weeks as well.
I was interested to see how our midfield performed with that chimp, only because I think the season's gone. I hope we don't rush Chip back, because it'd sort of be interesting to see how we adjust without him. Because if you learn how to do something without him, maybe when he comes back, we could use him in a different way. Because, you know, we've been using him for the last few years as sort of like, you know, put the whole weight of the inside work on him, and everyone works off him. Who knows? We might something might come out of having to adjust with his absence. Look, you never know.
I appreciate what you're saying from an intellectual perspective, but from an emotional perspective, few things bring me more joy than Dustin Martin in the forward line. So
that's a good point. I was actually I am interested what Miles and Brendan Nels had, 30 contested possessions, which is high for him.
Yeah, I thought he played okay. Look, just a random assortment of things from me, and that There is the AFL, feels like the AFL silly season is already underway. Lachie Whitfield apparently breaking some hearts in St Kilda and Essendon by recommitting to GWS today. But some names just for people to keep an eye on when the whole topic of contract extensions comes up. So on the first ruck, that the whole ruckmen are different in that there's only 18 first ruckman jobs around the country, and there's always a few backup ruckmen around who would be desperately keen at the why would you want to play state league football when you can be a senior AFL player? And two to keep an eye on, Tom Nichols in the Gold Coast, who's a big athletic kid, up until this season has been the Suns' number one ruckman, and in his contract year has lost the number one ruck job to Daniel Curry and shows no signs of getting it back. He's only 24 years of age, big athlete. And Billy Longo at the Saints, again, relatively young, only 22, has lost his job to Tom Hickey, played a lot of VFL this year, both out of contract at the end of the year. Just worth tracking, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's certainly good points. The who's going to play ruck next year is very much an open question.
I was very much. I've been keeping an eye on Zach Clark as well because he's the easiest one to recruit because he's a free agent. But yeah, frankly, been a bit discouraged by his performance to date. So yeah, that's forced me to look afield. The other one for the other GWS player to keep an eye on is Jake Steele, who we were rumoured to be keen on a couple of years ago at draft time. Damien Barrett said we were chasing him very hard. He's a hard as nails midfielder, inside midfielder. So, yeah, just, again, worth watching.
Okay. What else has struck you fancy?
Well, I listened to, there's been a barrage of Richmond media, and one thing I really took away from Peggy O'Neill's interview last week was her ability in a very calm and professional manner to throw people under the bus.
Oh, yeah? Who did she throw under the bus, do you think?
Oh, I thought in no way did I take away from her comments that she has full confidence in Dan Richardson being allowed to speak in public, which if you sort of add on to the fact that Dan Richardson has conspicuously failed in our high-profile efforts to chase after players from opposition clubs, there's probably a lot of hot seats in Richmond at the moment, but I'm just putting it there that there is no hotter seat than Dan Richardson's right now.
I think the competition for the hottest seat at Tigerland is intense. I could name four or five people that top my scapegoat list on various, depending on my mood. But I think Dan is not good in the media. And that doesn't mean he's bad at his job, but he's just not. He's got off to a bad start.
Well, it should be part of his job, and it confirms for me an impression, frankly, that he only opens his mouth to change feet.
It's interesting that you've turned heel on him in particular, but he is the person we have heard whispers
about him before.
Have we? I've just heard about his media performance.
About his media performance, yeah.
And it was things that you can see publicly. Like obviously the big fish thing was not a smart thing to say, but drafting Rhys Connacher wasn't a smart thing to do either. You can't get focused on one decision. But I just, one point I would make about Dan Richardson that supports your point is that he's the one that reports to the board about the football department. So if you sort of, if you think that I do, for instance, that we've been far too complacent about our assistant coaches, for instance, who's ultimately responsible for that is the board. Like, if Damien Hardwick's flaw is, which I've heard from numerous people, and Carrie wrote it, is he's too loyal, well, do you blame Dimmer for that? Or do you blame, say, the football manager for not having the guts to sort of say, well, my job is to bring a bit more contestability in? I don't know. Like, we're getting into a gray area here, but the point is, I think this is a problem, and someone should be held responsible, and it may well be it's Dan Richardson's fault.
I know. Well, and Dan Richard, like, the Francis Jackson legacy is probably deserves its own show, but it, you know, he's been at the club so long and has been involved with so many players, it's not easy to make a judgment. Whereas Dan Richardson's got a shorter track record, and, you know, when looking at the hits and misses, there's not as many hits. So that's sort of,
I do agree with that, but it's also the sort of the caution of the he's the most obvious scapegoat, and he is, because he also reports to the board, and I'd be really angry if I was a board member right now.
Fair enough.
You know, there's both the appeal, but also the moment where you, you know, it's always important to look at the full picture. Anyway, because the season's turned bad so early, the board has plenty of time to think about this.
I know. You'd love to be a fly on the wall. Was there anything else? Do you want to talk about the VFL?
Ah, well, isn't the VFL a good story?
Well, yes, whilst I'm deeply fond of young players making their debuts, I've resigned myself, sadly, that Markov still seems to be a little way away from senior football, whereas Adam Markham seems reasonably close, which he's probably a player on the list that is the least exciting debut.
Yeah, I mean, again, kicking a very obvious target, but, you know, he's playing best, as you say, he's been consistently our best player, but if you look at the sort of history of AFL mids who debut in the AFL and then play consistently at a high level, they play better in the VFL than Adam Markin is. So,
Look, he's a sort of always, you know, I'm perfect. As with Kane Lambert, I'm happy to take third or fourth round rookies who are, you know, the 23-year-old VFL guy who can play.
You're missing that. I'm not questioning the drafting of him. I mean, that's for a later question. I'm just saying that nothing in his form is enough to get me as excited about his debut as I was about Lambert or Miles, for instance.
No, true. It is, sadly, the way the VFL team is, it's hard to see a lot of guys pushing up. I think, you know, well, hopefully that if the senior team has Grimes, Rance and possibly Cochin coming back into it, there's no question of anyone from the VFL. It does make me sad about Ivy, I must say. Like, you know, we've talked endlessly about how much we love Ivy, but back, as we know, back injuries are the type of injuries that just sap your career, and that's sadly the trajectory that he seems to be on.
It's very sad. It's just one of the many kicks in the groin we're getting this season. For what it's worth, in the plastic spoon race, I would actually be playing Taylor Hunter ahead of Steve Morris, but in no way can I get myself emotionally involved in that sort of trade-off.
Look, I was genuinely disappointed Ivan Soldo didn't play in the VFL this week. You know, that's where we're at.
Yep. So Swans.
Do we have it? Do we have Do we have a chance this week?
The point I was going to make about the Swans is the Swans game last year was the last game, the last Richmond game, which I genuinely loved. There was, they surprised me by coming back. You probably don't remember, but I was making the point that we hadn't had many comebacks when we did come back against the Swans in the past.
That's true.
And we had a bad record at the SCG, and I just thought we were gone. And then we came back completely against expectations and actually won a well-deserved victory. And that was, I remember just being so excited at that game. Like, it was definitely the highlight for me last year. It was better than the Hawthorn win. Just remembering that was a fantastic game. If you extend that, I think obviously Rance will be back. I think we're sort of, I don't think we're alive. It's not completely impossible.
No, and Buddy's been huge for them. You know, Alex Rance to play on Buddy, that's not a bad matchup. I do, the question of us being vulnerable on the outside is going to be a big one, because the Swans running game has been pretty good at times. So yeah, I'm not going to tip us to win, but yeah, I do think we've got a chance, particularly if both Grimes and Cochin can make it up.
Yeah, I mean, we're 27 point underdogs, which is not disastrous like it's when you're playing in Sydney. The thing that worries me, by the way, we haven't beat the spread this year.
Oh God, that's depressing.
Yeah. Depends who you've been betting on, I suppose. It does worry me that, it's part personnel, it's part, I think we're trying to play a slightly different way. The sort of the things that we used to do that helped us that win, particularly the sound defensive structures, they're just, for whatever reason, they're not there anymore. So it makes me ask, you know, can we replicate our good record against, you know, we played some good footy against the Swans over the last few years. So that's what worries me. But I mean, you know, thank you, Captain Obvious. We're paying 410 to 123. So, you know, it's not a big, but you know, so as we say, it's a live dog. It's the SCG. It'll be nice. Yeah. What I just hope is that someone, like, if we win because Dusty gets 45 possessions and kicks 6 goals, well, actually, that'll be great to watch, but
that'd be awesome.
It would be awesome. You're quite right. What I hope is that, in the game, that, some players who will be potentially be around the next time we're challenging for a premiership, show something unexpectedly good. That'll make me happy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, a little bit of hope is all we ask for.
I think that's a good way to end the show.
My name's Nick. We're Richmond Tiger Talk.